Shane Evans head football coach Matt Dillon is here. Coach, 39-37, double overtime thriller last night with a win.
Well, it was a thriller without any doubt. You know, and I want to take this opportunity to commend the Manson Northwest Webster football team and their coaching staff, because those kids, I mean, they laid it all on the line last night. I mean, they played their hearts out. And you know, when you're 0-3 and you're coming off a big loss, and that's a tough go to get those kids ready to play. And they were ready last night. They came out and they hit us in the mouth and their tailback. You know, this is the run of three in a row that we've seen in the state, maybe three of the best that are out there in Class A. And Braden Joel had a great night, rushed for almost 300, I think. We held him under three. He got 299.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
I think Dana ought to just kind of skew that for 1 yard and give the young man a 300-yard night, but that's my take. But he was phenomenal. You know, and I find out this morning that he had sprained his ankle this week in practice, so he's literally running on a leg and a half last night. Thankfully, he wasn't, you know, full 100%.
If he'd have had two ankles, he might have had 400 yards.
Yeah, Jiminy Christmas, you know, we wouldn't have had any shot of slowing him down. So, really good football player, and you know, he did it to us last year, too, so I shouldn't be surprised. You know, he's a really nice player and plays extremely hard. One of my former football players from St. Ed said, "Coach, I see him in the weight room over at Iowa Central all the time, and he really works hard in that weight room." And I said, "Well, you know, that sometimes that's what it takes."
Absolutely. You
know? So anyway, my commendation to Coach Hart and his team, and you know, it's a shame somebody had to lose that game, because I mean, it was a back and forth affair all night long. I mean, I faked a heart attack with my team when I came back from congratulating Coach Hart, you know, because you're right. I mean, it was nip and tuck the whole way, and you know, coming down to missed extra points and who's gonna connect on an extra point, whether it's a 2-point conversion or a kick, and both teams struggled in that area last night, and you know, and fortunately for us, we were able to convert the last 2-point conversion for the victory.
Yeah, you know, you talk about their effort last night, and, you know, I can't say enough that I'm impressed by that. I mean, they came off the COVID quarantine. They had a walkthrough the day of the North Union game last Saturday. They go up there. You know, that's an incredibly difficult situation, a tall task. And then they turn around and get ready for you guys after playing on Saturday last week. And really, probably, I think, would be, if Coach Hart was here, I think he'd probably tell you the best game they played all year was last night.
Exactly. I don't think there's any doubt. They've gotten better. I mean, even last week, you could see glimpses. It just wasn't consistent, you know. But last night, for them, it was consistent. And they were able to take care of their business on offense. And they moved the football all night long. We came up with some crucial stops. I mean, we were the proverbial bend but don't break defense last night, even though they got through a few times. But I mean, we gave up a ton of yards for them to be able to do that. And you know, hats off to our defense for rising up and getting those stops when they needed to. You know,
right.
We stopped Joel on the 2-point conversion that would have put them up by 8 points. It allowed us to be able to score the touchdown and then go for two for the win. So instead of having to get the two to keep it tied. You know, so I mean, that was a huge play for our defense, and I think Dana told me that was the first time all night we had held them to under 3 yards on that on a carry.
So, oh wow!
Yeah, I mean, that's what that tells you. So, you know, you get it done in the crunch time, it makes it that much sweeter.
Well, I didn't realize that. That's a shout out to Dana Becker from the Messenger Sports Department, because he's always right on top of it.
Dana's the man now. He's all over that stuff. So I mean, it's really cool. You know, and he talked about Case Baker, one of our tailbacks. And, you know, 2 years ago, Case and Sean, now we played Manson at Dodger Stadium, last game of the year. Both teams had kind of struggled during the year. I think we were 2-6 at the time. They might have been 3-5 or 2-6, somewhere in there. Anyway, it was another one of those types of games that went to overtime. And in the overtime, our starting quarterback cramped up on the third down play. So now we got fourth and goal from the nine. All right. So we didn't have a kicker 2 years ago, so we couldn't try a field goal. So we brought Drew Schaefer in, and Case was a split end, and Drew was the quarterback who hadn't taken a snap during the entire game.
Oh, wow.
And we called a slant pass to Case, and I'm not sure that those two ever even practiced that route in at any time in the season, because Drew was our starting split end at the time.
Okay.
Drew hit Case right between the numbers of 24, and the headline in the paper was Case Closed.
That's a clever headline.
It really was. But huge win, and you know, for Drew to step in that situation on fourth and goal and a nine, not having taken a snap in the game, and threading the needle on a slant route for the touchdown, it was incredible to me. And
I think that probably told you right there, I got something special with this guy.
I say he's got ice water in his veins, you know, and nothing seems to bother him, you know, and he's able to make play after play after play, and you know, just a phenomenal young man and an outstanding football player.
Coach Matt Dillon, St. Edmund Gales head football coach, my guest here on the Hy-Vee Fort Dodge Coaches Corner. You know, Coach, you talked about that 2 years ago, and then to have another just absolute thriller in double overtime to win it last night. You know, it was kind of one of those deals where at least I know you want to clean some things up defensively, obviously, but at least your offense got back on track after last week.
Yeah, but it took us a while, and that was the frustrating part. Early in the game, we didn't score until, I don't know, 20 seconds to go in the first half. We hit Anthony Lucina on a post route down the middle for a big touchdown. And, again, that was huge. We kicked the extra point, so it's 7-7 at the half. I think it was 13-13 at the end of the third quarter. They scored first. We went up 13-7. And we're driving again to get to go up two scores, and then we turn it over, and they just come right down and score. And now it's 13-all. Then they get the ball back and score again. So now they're up 20-13 or 19-13, I guess, because they missed the extra point. Well, we score to tie it, and then it ends up tied 25-all going into overtime. Great outcome for us, tough outcome for Manson, but those kids have nothing to hang their head about.
It's one of those deals where somebody's got to lose, unfortunately.
Exactly, and that's, you know, that's athletics, whether it's at a high school level, college level, pro level. Anytime you lose one like that, it's really tough. Anytime you win one like that, it's a great thing.
I call those games an all-nighter, because if you win it, you're going to be riding that high all night, and you're not going to sleep. If you lose, you're going to second-guess yourself to the point where you're not going to.
What should I have done differently, you know? And it really came down to that final play, you know. We scored a touchdown to tie it, and, you know, we made a decision to go for two. Basically, we ran the touchdown play to one side, flipped it over, ran the same exact play to the other side for the two-point conversion.
With Case Baker making that play last night, and, you know, he made that play 2 years ago. That play 2 years ago, did that have bearing on the play calling last night in that situation?
No, not really. You know, I mean, Case is a phenomenal competitor. I mean, and all of our guys, the one thing that I think is paramount to teaching young men is having the ability to compete.
Yeah. Because you're going to compete in life the rest of the way.
Your whole life. And I tell these guys all the time, you're going to compete for a job. You're going to compete for a girlfriend. You're going to compete potentially for a wife. You're going to compete
for
in everything
house.
You do from now until you get put in the ground. And you better learn how to do it, and you better be good at it, and you're going to be successful in this life. And that's so critical to be able to import that stuff on our young men, that I truly believe in that. You know, I give them some of, you know, my old corny stories about being competitive and all that kind of stuff. I said, when I play back, you remember the game backgammon. You might be too young. I don't know. But
I never played that.
It was an 80s game, you know, and kind of like a board game. But, you know, when I played backgammon with my wife, I played to win. It doesn't matter what game I'm playing. Sure. I'm playing to win. If we're keeping score, I'm trying to win, you know. And my kids, you know, when we played games when they were younger, you know, they got the same treatment. I said, Dad's coming to win, so you better be ready.
Well, I tell you what taught me how to compete, Coach, was having a brother that's 11 years older. And every single day when I was a kid till I was about in ninth grade, my brother, one-on-one basketball, he would beat me. He would beat me.
You finally got him once in ninth grade. Your whole life around, right?
I got him in ninth grade, and after I got him a couple of times, that was it. There's no more one-on-one anymore.
He wasn't playing you anymore.
And so I concentrated on competing with somebody else at that point. As well. So, you know, that was one of those deals.
You forced him to quit. He couldn't play anymore.
yeah, that was about it for that deal. And so, you know, that was one of the same deals where, you know, had my brother, you know, lightened up on me at any point, that wouldn't have taught me what it was going to take to compete at the best possible level I could compete at, you know. And so I identify with that. And I love that approach because I think we have a society now that too often we're telling people you don't have to compete.
Yeah, and that drives me crazy.
And now,
you know, with my personality, that absolutely
I can't deal with that either. You know, so I think it's very important to teach that as a value, and you certainly do that through your football program. You use the vehicle of football to teach that, and that's certainly something that's important. 39-37, you know. I heard Casey Miner's call of that last play last night.
I listened to it on the radio on the way in. It's the first call I've heard from Casey. That was really cool.
So. Yeah, and you could tell the excitement in his voice, the first, you know, big call that he's had in that situation. And so I was happy. I listened to it on the playback last night, and I said, when I found out how you guys won it, because Casey sent me a game report at the end of the game last night that looked like War and Peace, the novel. I mean, it was that they scored here, and they came back and scored here, and then Braden Joel, you know, ran to the end of the earth and back, and then Sean Flattery scored. And I couldn't even keep up, but I took some bits and pieces and formulated for that, and I said, man, I'm going to cut that final call out. We're going to put that on the news because not only is it a big play, but it was a big call for him in that situation too, and one that, you know, you could just tell that the excitement of the moment through the way that he was able to describe that moment.
Absolutely, and you know, you used to watch the ABC Wild World of Sports, you know,
right?
The thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. You know, I saw several of those Manson players with their heads down on the ground as they were, you know. When that final play happened, and you see our guys jumping up and down on each other in the end zone, and I mean that's the thrill of victory and the agony.
And we've all been on both sides.
Absolutely.
You stick around this game long enough, or any sport long enough, you can build that.
And the thing is, Rob, that was a rivalry game. This is not some random team that we play once every 10 years or twice every 10 years.
It means something.
It means something. I mean, these kids live near each other. They're around each other. They, you know, they see each other all year long. You know, and Case Baker, he's moved out. They've got a lake home out at Twin Lakes out there, which is right smack in the middle of Manson country. So, you know, I think he's really excited to be able to score that winning 2-point conversion, and just a great overall night. And like I said, I have all the respect in the world for what Manson was able to do last night, and those kids played their hearts out for Coach Hart and his staff. And that was a great job by them as well.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the thing, is I think you have to commend what Coach Hart's been able to do, because it would be very easy for the adversity they faced and the difficulty and hardship they've had to just kind of pack it in. But they haven't done that in any way. They're going to give it everything they got. They did last night, and they're going to continue to build. And here's the thing. The week is coming where I talk to Marty Hart, where they're on the W side of the column. The week is coming. There's no doubt in my mind when I say that. And they've not only dealt with, you know, COVID and it's his first year, and they've dealt with some other situations that they're currently dealing with, too, with different hardships. So with all that said, you know, I'm very, you know, very pleased, very impressed with their ability to continue to just put their best foot forward. You know?
No question. And they've gotten better, much better, you know, just from the week of the North Union game to last night. It looked like a different football team, you know. and rightfully so against North Union. They looked a little discombobulated. I mean, you know, if you tried to go play a game without practicing for 2 weeks, could you even imagine what might look like? I mean, I would have never predicted anything but what happened to them last week, you know, just because, you know, there's a whole lot of variables that go into this sport. And when you don't have time to practice to kind of put those variables together, it's incredibly difficult. And I don't know that anybody realizes how difficult that task had to be for them.
Oh, absolutely.
Going up to North Union.
It's almost an insurmountable obstacle there, and difficult situation. And they were able to, at least they were able to, you know, go out there and give their best effort last week, and then turn in, you know, much more improved effort in terms of execution last night too. St. Edmund head coach Matt Dillon, my guest. I almost called you Matt Damon right there. Matt Dillon, my guest here. They win last night over Mansa Northwest Webster 39-37. And, Coach, you know, riding high, of course, off of that win last night. But now you've got to, after this weekend at least, you've got to turn around and prepare for a pretty good Alto Aurelia team. I know you haven't had a lot of time to look at them yet, but give me what your initial thoughts.
Well, you know, they're a run-based team. They've got a couple of guys that can run the football. You know, I think they had a couple injuries early.
Okay.
In their first game, actually, against Central Lyon, George Little Rock, who's a really good 2A program. They got rocked pretty good in that first game. I think it was like 54-7. You know, but two of their best players were standing on a sideline. And those kids have come back. Now, I don't think they're 100%, but they're playing. You know, they're two of their best defensive football players. Now, they had a tough go last night against Wes Hancock, who a lot of people are going to have a tough go against. I think Cole Kelly had 7 touchdowns last night against those guys.
Wow.
Just 7, you know.
He's a touchdown machine.
Yeah, right? Just 7. So
well, you held him to 5.
I got to be happy with holding him to 5. That guy, he's a beast, you know. I keep telling people, I said, listen, I said, I know that there are other good backs in this state, you know, in Class
sure.
A. There's got to be. But I'm telling you, we played 3 of the best in the last 3 weeks, without any doubt. And the guys that we're going to play this coming week maybe aren't in that class, but they're pretty darn good.
You know?
So I think they were heavily senior dominated last year, very similar to what Wes Hancock was. And it's taken Wes Hancock, you know, it took him the first 2 games to really kind of
get back to the
who
group.
They were.
Yeah.
Week 3 was Bishop Garrigan, and they handled them 35-0, and then they put it on us 55-14, and then last night I think it ended up 54-26 or something. So, I mean, they were able to put some points on them. They were able to put some points on the board against them,
right.
but they couldn't stop them. So I'm hoping that we're going to have that same type of success offensively. It's a different place to play. It's kind of like out in a city park.
It's
kind of a neat environment.
Oh, that's where they play that semi-pro team.
Well, I don't know about any of that, but I just know it's kind of a cool place to play. We played there last year, didn't have much success there last year, but like I said, it was a senior-dominated team, and they were very good a year ago. So it's going to be a tough challenge for us going on the road for sure.
Absolutely. Sure. Certainly will. And I'm pretty sure they do have a semi-pro team up there in that area.
They very well do.
Probably plays at that same spot. So that'll be an interesting deal. Tough situation. And you know what I do think here, Coach, is that you'll get a better idea of your run defense and if it's you or if it's the caliber of back you've been playing,
well,
how much of that combination it is.
You know, part of our situation, Rob, is we're not very big up front.
Yeah.
So when we play teams with size like Manson,
sure.
like West Hancock, like North Union, we're outsized up front. I mean, against pretty much everybody we play. And so, you know, you got to give our guys a little bit of credit for just trying to hang in there and battle against those bigger guys. And, you know, we've tried to do some things scheme-wise the last 3 weeks that have helped us. I think some things have, some things probably haven't, but that's how it works. You know, you got to experiment with some different things and see what's gonna work for you. We've had some personnel issues, and hopefully those things will start to correct themselves here in another week, and we'll get back to it, playing really solid defense, hopefully by next week.
Yeah, and that's what you're certainly looking for, to kind of step in that right direction now. And you've had this run of just absolutely talented tailbacks, and now you've got to start to kind of figure things out for the run defense. You know, you mentioned your size up front, and here's an illustration of that. John Nimmers plays defensive tackle for you. John is 195 pounds.
I don't think he's that.
He's sopping wet.
Yeah,
that.
Maybe.
John would be an outside linebacker for a lot of people.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
a defensive tackle
yep.
for you guys.
Yep. Yep.
And
Nathan Russell, who starts on both sides of the ball. Nathan's 5'11", maybe 6 feet tall, probably 180 pounds. Peyton Scott starts at offensive tackle on the linebacker. He's 6'1", 170.
And I told you before, I thought he was a receiver when you told me he was a football player.
Yeah, I know. So, you know, but that's you play with what you have, and you try to build your offensive and your defensive scheme around the personnel that you have. And, you know, and I think for the most part, our guys have done a tremendous job. But you know, there are times when it looks like, you know, they get the right guys blocked in the right way, and it looks like you don't have anybody on the field sometimes because they're getting washed down or kicked out or whatever it might be. So, you know, there's things scheme-wise that we can work on, but it's also technique stuff that we just got to continue to work to get better, and taking on blocks and getting off blocks and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and that's the thing, too. When you've got a big offensive line like that, you've got an offensive scheme like Manson has, it's a smash mouth style, West Hancock too, you know, they can take those big hogs up front and just go downhill all day long. And then you add in a guy who can run it back there behind it, and you've got a combination there.
You know, they sit in there with like a 1-inch split, you know, they're butt cheek tight in terms of their splits. So there's not a lot of gaps to try to get guys through and penetrate and make plays, you know. And if they come off the ball and the low man's going to win 90% of the time, and regardless of weight. And, you know, we work on our guys trying to stay low every day. And sometimes we do better than others. But, you know, it's a Class A is a little bit different. I know when you go to your 4A games, you're going to see spread offenses, and they're, you know, they're going to have four or five wide receivers on the field, sometimes empty backfield. You know, 4A changed a lot from the time I coached at Dowling. You know, and from 96 to 05, we were the only wing T team in Class 4A. Everybody else at that time was either the I formation power offense, or they were spread offenses were just kind of coming into vogue at that time.
Right.
Well, now you're an anomaly if you're not a spread team.
Right.
You know,
even if you run the ball, you're going to run it out of the spread formation.
You're going to run it out of the spread. Why? Because you're trying to get guys out of the box.
Yeah.
You get guys out of the box, you don't have to block them. You know what I mean? It's a different mentality. You don't see that very much in Class A, although you see more and more teams trying to do some of that. A lot of it is teams like West Hancock, who is a quasi wing T team. I mean, they basically have three running plays. They're going to run the fullback belly, the fullback trap, and then they'll fake the fullback trap and run the buck sweep. And those are their three run plays. And they're telling you that before you play, and you're practicing them every single day.
It doesn't matter.
But when you get there, it's you're not practicing against your own guys. You're not practicing against your JV team. You're practicing against one of the best teams, or playing against one of the best teams in the state. So, you know, that's the tough part of it.
Absolutely. You know, it is. It's one of those deals where when you can do what you do at a high level, you can execute. It really doesn't matter if people know what's coming. Certainly that the case with West Hancock. And, you know, that's one that, you know, Hopefully you're not going to see them again unless you see them again maybe in the state championship.
Well, it would probably, my gut feeling would probably be that game, if we made it that far and if they made it that far, would probably be a quarterfinal or a semifinal game, because I'm guessing, and who knows? I mean, we're 2 weeks away, and we have no idea how the state's going to put this
thing. Which I'm a little surprised, because they know everybody's going to make it, well, so it doesn't really matter about the seeding as much.
Well, it kind of does. I mean, you should be rewarded if you've got a team that's 7-0 or 6-1. You should probably be rewarded to play a team that maybe struggled during the season. You know, it went 0-7 or 1-6. In the first round.
Well, and I get you there, but what I'm saying is at the end of week five now to the end of week seven, I don't see that the body of work is not, for most people, not going to change a ton in 2 weeks.
Well, it shouldn't, but you know what? I'm guessing they've got names all over some kind of whiteboard up there in Boone, and as they're trying to figure this whole thing out. I mean, this is a new thing for everybody.
It is unprecedented, you know? For sure.
And so the first time in the history of Iowa high school football that every school in the state is going to be
everybody
in the
gets
playoffs.
In. Yeah.
Unless you get hit by COVID in the last 2 weeks, and then you're out, you know, so which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, everybody's trying to dodge that bullet, you know what I mean? And you do everything you can practice-wise in school and, you know, in their personal lives to keep them away from whatever it is that may be causing it. And I mean, it's just a different time in 2020, and I can't wait for the vaccine to get here, you know. And we can hopefully at that point get back to something that's somewhere near normal.
Yeah, that's a good point. You made a mention here, and this sparked a light bulb here for me. Now, I know you're not going to do this, and I know that the coaches that come on this show probably aren't going to do this. But in softball, we saw some coaches that elected not to play late regular season games because of the risk of getting COVID and being out in the playoffs. Do you think we're going to see some football coaches in the state that say, no, we're not coming week number seven. We're just going to call that a no contest because the state has laid that down as
well.
Well,
that's kind of the marker, right? So I would hope not, but if you got a COVID scare, it makes sense to do it, you know. But if you don't, then I think you need to play. I mean, I think that's why we're here. You know, if you knew that going in, why would you all of a sudden just stop the game, you know, and not play it? I don't know. I think there's got to be some type of integrity in the system and in what it is that we're doing. And you know, if you legitimately have to quarantine a bunch of guys, well, I get the fact that you wouldn't want to play that game. But if you don't, and there's no reason not to play,
right,
then I think you should play it. That's the way I look at it.
Well, yeah, and I think you're right there. And I think that comes into play with, you know, kind of just doing the right thing in that situation there as well. Coach Matt Dillon has been my guest here on the High V Fort Dodge Coach's Corner. Coach, we're going to go and let you take some heart medication here and get back kind of to a normal pulse rate after last night.
I appreciate that. I've got a couple prescriptions waiting for me over there.
Well, you go and pick them up. Congratulations on a win and a thrilling ball game last night. An instant classic, as I called it this morning, 39-37 over Mansa Northwest Webster. And good luck against Alta Aurelia. Of course, we'll be talking to you this week, and we'll get a better feel for what they do here a little later this week.
Sounds good, Rob. Thanks a lot.
That's Coach Matt Dillon, St. Edmund head football coach.